With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of React Roundup. I am TJ Van Tol, and with me today on the panel, I've got Jack Harrington.
Hello.
And Paige Niedringhaus.
Hey, everyone.
And our special guest today is Mike Elchick, which hopefully I did justice there to the pronunciation. Mike, welcome to React Roundup. Why don't you tell people who you are, why you're famous, and if I pronounced your name correctly.
Hey, TJ. How are you? Yeah, you pronounced it perfectly. My name is Michael Che. I'm a developer in Argentina, but working for US clients and clients all around the world. I do full stack JavaScript development, and I always have a thing for React. So here we are.
Cool.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topendevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv, and I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want. Right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topendevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topendevs.com.
I know there's a variety of things we want to talk about today, but one of them is kind of revolving around the full stack nature of this. And I know when we were talking pre-show, you mentioned your interest in some of this, the full stack stuff, and you threw around some words and phrases I'm less familiar with. So maybe, do you want to introduce, like, talk about what you do there and the sort of things that excite you in that space?
Yeah, so we as devs like building products, right? And products normally like need a backend. So although we like talking about React and the front end and Next.js and Svelte and all these cool frameworks, we eventually need a database and somewhere to put our logic, our private business logic. And that ends up being a backend, right? And right now, the backend is it's not as trendy as the frontend, at least to talk about on Twitter. So as like it's crazy, but it's 2022, and the gold standard for the backend is Express. And if you look at the Express repo, like the last commit, it's several months ago. I don't know really. But when you are tasked with building a product end to end, you need to also like focus on the back end and see what's the best way to make it talk to the front end and to the database. And that's like what full stack means, like having a cohesive system that helps you get a faster developer, like productivity experience of that.
Yeah, it's funny because like back in my day, the you didn't write backends in JavaScript, right? You had your Java developers or .NET developers, or if you go back far enough, PHP or Perl or whatever was driving your backend. So it's kind of cool now that JavaScript is starting to become, well, it's past mainstream, but like there's more options that we have nowadays. So you mentioned Express as one potential path. What are some other like frameworks, approaches that you like using in that sort of space?
Well, there are many. Like Express is the one that most people know, but there's also Adonis.js that doesn't get the recognition it deserves. It's like the closest you can get to Ruby on Rails, but if it were made on JavaScript. And then you have Nest.js, not to be confused with Next.js. I believe you talked about Nest in the past. I personally don't like Nest very much with all the decorators. And
really?
Stuff. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's a hot take.
But, all right.
Yeah, I'm on the Adonis bandwagon if I have to choose. But there's one that captured my attention some time ago, which is Blitz.js. And Blitz.js, it's made by a guy named Brandon Bayer and a team of like open source collaborators. And Blitz.js is basically a framework that sits on top of Next.js. And Blitz.js gives you, in the same way that Next.js allows you to define pages by creating a file, Blitz.js allows you to define endpoints like an API by creating a file on the file system. And then it allows you to import those API endpoints on the front end. And at compile time, it will remove those endpoints from the client side. And it will like generate a client, like imagine like an Axios get, Axios post, fetch, something like that. It will obviously use fetch, I imagine. I haven't looked into
the database.
Yeah. But yeah, it allows you to import API endpoints into the client, and then it will remove them when you compile the thing, which is super interesting. Why is it interesting? Well, because when you import a function into the front end and nothing screams, you will get all the type information. Like you need to call the API endpoint with certain parameters. It will tell you what parameters those are. You will get some information back. It will give you the type, the return type of the API endpoint. And you will forget everything related to response, data, errors. Errors are handled super beautifully. I don't know if that's a construct in English, but you can throw an error on the back end and you can catch it in the front end. That's incredible. They abstract all of that away. So I worked on building a full stack app on Blitz, and it was like a really nice experience.
I believe, wasn't there some news recently that Blitz is changing up their approach? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, and I am so sad about it.
Oh no.
I've read the thread on GitHub. They are pivoting. They didn't have the growth that they wanted.
Oh right, yeah.
So they're pivoting to like preserve the things that people like the most. For example, they gave you authentication out of the box. So they were keeping that, but all the full stacky things are getting thrown out, I believe. I think you should talk to Brandon Bayer more than me about this. But yeah, I believe they will partner with TRPC, which is also something super interesting in this space and does something similar. I can explain what TRPC is if you want. TRPC is a library made by a guy named Alex. He goes by Cat on Twitter. Let me search him. One second, I want to give... Yes, yeah, his Twitter handle is alex.js. And he says, a single dev, he made an incredible library called TRPC. And TRPC works by using a little hack, which is you can, on the front end, import type definitions of the back end with the import type statement, which is different from your normal import statement. The import type statement gets removed at compile time. So that allows you in the front end to import things from the back end without worrying about exposing business logic, secrets, or things like that. So TRPC allows you to structure your code in a certain way to define a router on the back end with queries and mutations, like things to retrieve and mutate data. And in the front end, you can import the type definition of everything you've defined on the back end and work with that. So in your form, in React, on the onSubmit handler, you can hit, like, you can call the tRPC query or mutation, and you will get, again, type inference on the parameters that it receives and type inference on the return type of the endpoint.
So is tRPC actually working with a database directly, or is it just like surface level for API type of stuff?
tRPC has two libraries. It's a client for React and a server library for you to implement in your server. If you use it with nothing else, it lifts a Node.js server for you. You can also pair it with Express in case you already have an Express application. But tRPC does nothing related to databases. If you want to connect everything full end-to-end, like client to database, then you need another piece of the puzzle, which is Prisma. Prisma is pretty famous nowadays, and it's well-deserved. It's an amazing library. It's super well engineered. Prisma is basically an ORM of the sorts. Many people don't call it an ORM, but it serves the same purpose, like connects your database to the backend. Prisma does the same that tRPC does for connecting your client to your backend with your backend to your database. So it gives you type information of what parameters you can do, you can request in a query, and gives you type information of what the query will return. So you can do complex joins, nested queries, all of that in just a single function call with a complex JSON that they make you fill. yeah.
Once you do it, you're good.
What, sorry?
But once you do it, you're good. You're you know, all that complex JSON.
Yeah, but it's not hard because as you're typing the JSON, you get type inference. So it already tells you what keys you can write and what keys you can't. So it's super easy. And in that way, you get something that's called end-to-end typing and gives your product an incredible level of security. Because if you change, for example, with a migration, a type on a database column, your Next.js or your React view will scream at you and will tell you, hey, you can't call, let's say you changed a string to a number. I don't know why you would make that, but imagine the situation. You can't call the length property on this string anymore because this property is now a number. And now you won't be able to ship a broken version of your front end. And so you will get a super cohesive product, which is super, super nice.
Yeah, cool. So just a little bit of inside baseball there. Does tRPC, what is tRPC? What is the protocol there? Is it still JSON or is it like a binary protocol like gRPC?
I don't know if it's a binary protocol. I haven't looked under the hood. I don't think it has. I think it's like a play on the words, but maybe it is. And Alex will send me a DM saying, hey, of course it is a binary protocol.
Well, that's the thing. Like I like gRPC, but it's a binary protocol, so I can't see it, right? I love the value of JSON is like I send something to the server. I can literally just go into my network panel. I can see it. I can read it. I can see the payload. And gRPC, I know that there's Chrome extensions to help, but it is a binary format that's all like smush. Very, very efficient, but it's also, you know,
it's hard
to read. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We could look and add it later to the episode. Like,
yes, I'm looking right now, actually.
Let's edit it in right now.
There you go. We ran the search.
So, Mike, one thing I'm curious about is how you got started using Adonis. Like you said, Express is kind of the gold standard that people default to. Nest is better known. There's a lot of Koa and Happy and kind of other server Node-powered server framework. So how did Adonis really appeal to you? And how did you get buy-in if you were potentially selling this into development teams? Because people, a lot of times, if they haven't heard of it or it's not like the hot new thing, are not necessarily game to try something new and different.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, really, this comes to like looking at the documentation and seeing the level of features and also the level of detail of the documentation, which is super important if you're going to base like a business on top of that. So Adonis does a great job at that. The documentation is amazing. It has recipes for normal things that you want to do. It has a strong community. It ticks all the boxes, really. I think it's not very popular nowadays, or at least not as popular as it deserves to be, because there's a trend going to the Jamstack, which Adonis has nothing to do with that. Adonis is more like a Ruby on Rails thing. I think people that want that kind of things goes for Ruby on Rails. Like, but yeah, Adonis deserves more praise than it has. It has an ORM that's called Lucid. That's pretty amazing. It gives you like role-based access controls. It has a rendering engine for you to have views and interpolate your views. It has, I believe it has queues. It has lots of things. Like it has an event system for you to throw events, catch them. And it's made with TypeScript, so everything's typed. So, you know, you will have a little bit more security on the back end. So yeah, that's my opinion on Adonis.
So if it's, I mean, it does sound really good the way that you're describing it. So how does it differ, or is it the same level of complexity to hook this up with, say, a React front end, like just a Create React app or something? Because Express, it's pretty simple. You just set up a couple proxies and it's ready to start passing data. So is it as simple with Adonis as well?
Yeah. Adonis allows you to define API endpoints that return and accept JSON. So mm-hmm. you can like very easily deploy an API. You don't need to render HTML or anything like that. Really, nowadays, I don't know why anyone would use Express instead of Adonis. Maybe the only reason would be the simplicity and the overhead of learning a new framework. But yeah, Adonis is much more robust than Express. Like even the creators tweet, I don't know, like literally tweet, we don't understand why people keep using Express. so yeah, they were.
Most of the stuff is built on top of Express, right? I mean, at the end of the
day. All the middleware, yeah.
Yeah. You know, at the actual like HTTP level is generally like, if you do like Nest.js, Nest.js sits on top of Express.js.
Yeah. Yeah, like with Nest, you can pick between Express and Fastify, something like that, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, Adonis doesn't use any...
Adonis is its own thing.
Oh, it's okay. Its own thing, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. All right, not messing around.
Yeah, that's a lot of work that's gone into that framework. We're on version 5, so 5 iterations. So something good will be in that framework for you, probably.
Because it's custom, does it make hosting weirder, more challenging at all? Or can you toss it on any sort of, like, I don't know, or would like platforms like Netlify and stuff support it?
Netlify, I don't know. I haven't used it. I'm on the Vercel team. No, stop joking. I always deployed Adonis on Heroku.
Okay.
But yeah, it's simple. It's just like node run server, something like that.
Okay.
Super simple. The reason, Paige, that I wouldn't use Adonis with a React frontend is that it's pretty complex to get this end-to-end typing that I now love and don't like not using, because Adonis won't give you the typings for the API endpoints. Unlike tRPC or unlike Blitz.js. So there's that.
Now, when you say typing there, you specifically mean TypeScript typing or?
Yeah.
Just, okay. So like automatically getting types for like stuff that's in your database consistently throughout. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like I'm of the idea that you need to write as little duplicate code as possible. So if you're mapping things from the database to the backend manually, then you're losing there. If you're manually mapping the things from the backend to the frontend, you're losing there. And you're losing on developer hours, on developer speed, on developer experience. That will cost you much more. It will have more bugs. Everything's worse. Like each time you need to map one thing to another, you will lose conventions, because in order to do that effectively, you need to have strong conventions on a team, and team changes and conventions come and go. So it's super hard.
One thing, you lose sync. I mean, that's the real deal. Is like, at the end of the day, if you got the database has its own types, and then the server has its types, and the client has its types.
Exactly. Right?
At some point in there, one of those types, they're not going to align. You know, you're going to change your string to a number.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And boom, blow up, right? If you have end-to-end typing, right? If you say, okay, the database type is truth, and then you just generate out the server types, you generate out the client types, then at the point when, you know, you make a change to the server, you say, okay, cool, I was wrong, this is a string, whatever, or the client database. Next thing you know, you're boom, 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 boom. And, you know, now the client's like, oh, wait, I'm thinking that's a number or whatever. And there you go.
Right. Yeah. And it's more than it's a number or it's a string. It has to do with the type abstractions that you create in your business logic. For example, what does the user type mean? Well, the user is an object that has the name property. It has the last name property. Like it has is admin property, like a Boolean sort of stuff. And why would you duplicate all of that abstraction that you made for you on the back end and duplicate it on the front end? You already have it in one place. Use it as a single source of truth. You will get very little errors from doing that.
Yep.
Time is of the essence when identifying and resolving issues in your software. And our friends at Raygun are here to help. Their brand new alerting feature is now available for crash reporting and real user monitoring to make sure you're quickly notified of the errors, crashes, and front-end performance issues that matter most to you and your business. Set thresholds for your alert based on an increase in error count, a spike in load time, or new issues introduced in the latest deployment, along with custom filters that give you even greater control. Assign multiple users to ensure the right team members are notified, with alerts linked directly to the issue in Raygun, taking you to the root cause faster. Never miss another mission-critical issue in your software again. Try Raygun Alerting today and create a world-class issue resolution workflow that gives you and your customer peace of mind. Visit Raygun.com to learn more. Their simple usage plans start from as little as $4 per month with unlimited apps and users. That's Raygun.com to start your free 14-day trial.
Paige and I have actually ran into this sort of firsthand because the app we've been working on, and we don't have much of a choice because the API we're working with is external, but It is funny how much logic it takes up just like parsing the stupid thing and like object right. types, and like that ends up being the biggest source of like messy code, and then all you have to test all of that, and it's just a hot mess. So I definitely kind of get the benefits or the argument you're going for there. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there's also a problem that I don't know if you experienced, but when I was using Adonis and the React application, the convention for a Postgres database is to use snake case for the attribute names. Mm-hmm. And then the convention for JavaScript is camel case for everything else.
Yeah.
So then you get like an incredible jump. Nothing works unless you map it. That's insane.
Yeah, and then nobody wants to write that mapping code either. That's like the worst.
Yeah.
And you wonder why it's broken and undefined and very
right. And you're like, oh, wait a second. It's a capitalization error? No.
Right.
I've spent an hour on a capitalization error.
Exactly. Now, to be fair, Adonis has a way of like doing the mapping for you and keeping everything typed. So good for them. They acknowledge this problem. But it's a problem still for Express applications, for example. It's not a problem if you use Prisma, for example. Prisma also allows you to bypass this problem because Prisma allows you to define a database schema in their own language. And the convention for the language of the database schema is to just use like JavaScript's camel case notation. So everything still works and everything's camel case and you never need to think about this problem ever again. Yeah.
Well, one thing I was wondering about is how does Adonis do with testing? Because I know that with Express and things like that, you can use Jest and that works pretty well across the stack. But does Adonis also support that sort of unit testing?
Super interesting question. The Adonis people, Aman Berg, I believe he's the founder of Adonis. They made their own testing framework for Adonis. I believe it's called JAPA. But the idea of, like, this is like the big idea. You can go and read the blog post on why they don't use Jest to test the backend. But it's a good idea. The idea is this. When you test your API, it's a good practice to test it in conjunction with your database. So like if you're hitting an endpoint that modifies the database, like do not mock the database. Leave the database running and like make it alter the value in the database, bring you the result back, etc. The thing is that Jest is a library that was made to test mainly frontends. So it can run many things on parallel. And the thing with running tests on your backend in parallel is that your tests will need like to start from a blank state, add some data, retrieve the results. And if all of them are running parallel, you will maybe get race conditions or like if you're not cleaning everything all the time, and that's the same as running them sequentially, you get into this sort of weird terrain where Jest doesn't seem to be the best option. So they made this their own framework for testing, which is especially good for backend testing. In order for you to like test each API endpoint as a transaction, like the transaction meaning the database concept of transaction. This is something I read a while ago, so it might be a little bit blurry. Sorry if I said anything wrong here, but you can go and read the blog post to get the whole idea.
Cool. TJ, well, you have a question?
Okay. Yeah. Well, like I know like this is a bit of a pivot, but I know you've also done some work around animations in React as well. So I wonder if you can talk through some of the work you've done there and some of the stuff you've written about.
Yeah. So I started like studying a little bit about animations because I started looking at what were the SaaS products that I liked the most. And I realized that I was super biased on what their landing pages looked like. And like, I was just judging the book by its cover. Like if your landing page was trash, I thought your SaaS was complete trash. And there were the best products had like subtle animations here and there, and they have a knife for detail. And I said, I need to learn how to make this thing. So I delved around and looked at a few libraries and basically ended up with Framer Motion. Framer Motion is a library made by the team at Framer. Framer is a collaborative design tool that allows you to like, it's similar to Figma, but it's more focused on animations. I believe I haven't used it. Sorry, Framer. But I like your library. That's their marketing plan, right? They make an open source library and now they get talked about in a podcast. So they're great. Go check them out. Their library, Framer Motion, is amazing. It allows you to do all sorts of things. It allows you, for example, to define an attribute called layout on your React components. And that automatically makes the components animate every time you change their position or their size. They will animate from the initial state to the finished state. For example, if you have container and all the items are in like flex start position, if you change that with a toggle, who knows, to a flex end, they will move across the screen if you like specify the layout property on your React components. There's only one thing that you need to do, which is like instead of using a div or a span or a p tag, you need to import motion library and use motion.div or motion.span. And that will allow you, will allow the elements to take this layout property. There is also another thing called shared layouts, which allows you to animate from one component to another component. So we're not talking about animating the position of a single component. We're talking about transitioning between one component and another. Mm. So for example, try to visualize this example. You have a list of items, right? And when you click an element of that list, that you get a modal opened, like with more information on that item. If you give the modal the same layout ID as the item on the list, and you specify the layout property on both items, when you click the list on the item, the same list item will like expand into the modal. So it's super simple to do, and it gives you like a lot of visual feedback on what's happening, because it's like it has to do with the material UI guidelines for design, that they wanted to like show you what's happening like with the transitions. Anyways, this doesn't have anything to do with material UI, just talking about the concept of like showing you where information is coming from visually. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, that's something I remember from Adobe times, was animations are best when they actually are providing context. It's like, oh, I went from here to here. I'm right. Looking at this now, and I'm now not looking at this. You know, it's not the gratuitous stuff where it's like, I have a restaurant in town where it's like, oh, I want to order now. And it's like, I kind of click it, and it's like a 500 millisecond, like, panel open. And I'm like, no, I just wanted to order, right? I mean, half a second to wait for that. So, you know, having that kind of like feedback, give you that context. And that's when it's actually significant. And that's when it's not gratuitous.
Right. Yeah, it's like when you minimize a window in an operating system, how it just does that slight little animation to show it going down into the dock area. It's like, those are nice, because it's like, it's not in your way. It's providing some context. It's like, oh, okay, well, if I want that window back, now I know where it went. And I feel like web apps could do more. Like, I still don't know why, like, native apps compared to web apps, native apps are far more willing to reach for animations than I feel like your average run-of-the-mill web app typically is fairly sterile in terms of, like, it doesn't really do a lot. Like, even for, like, you open up the app of, like, even some, like, banks and stuff, they'll throw out some fun animations here or there, whereas your random banking web app is the most mundane, right? It won't take
the worst.
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, to Jack's point, I'm not suggesting they like make things spin and buzz and whirl around or anything, but some of these, right, like looking at Framer Motion's site, you're right. It's like it does make, whether or not it's right or not, it does make it look more appealing, more fun to use. If you do it right, more, I don't know.
Can I jump in just for a second to defend the web, though? For, like, you know, honestly, the mobile folks, they deal with like Android, they deal with like iOS, you know, and there's always been these animations, whereas we have to deal with IE8, you know, and IE8 ain't having that. Yeah. Well, yeah, fine. But like, maybe, I don't know, if you have an older app, like, you know, like the IE11, right?
That's true.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. You have to, you know, I guess with the mobile discussion, mobile has always been more touch oriented, because we know that there's a very limited amount of space that a user is going to be dealing with on their phone. So they have to swipe and click and hopefully not have to expand and collapse stuff. But that's kind of inherently built in. Whereas with desktop, depending on how large your monitor or your screen is, you can put a lot more stuff in there. So at once, and users don't have to necessarily go through multiple motions to get somewhere. So, and exactly like you said, we're dealing with a lot more browsers than just Safari or Android, which is pretty much all you've got when you're on a mobile phone, unless you're using a Windows phone or BlackBerry or something. But that's a whole other set of problems BlackBerry that you're opening yourself up to.
I don't know. I was on the native side, so I can be the native argument person, because your native developer would say, yeah, but there's also 10,000 Androids, and there's all sorts of iPhones with different resolutions, and there's iPads, and there's different software, there's different Android versions, different iOS versions. So it's not exactly a utopia there either. And they managed to get it done.
Yeah. the operating system makes up for a lot in that case, though.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think Paige's insight was great. Like, mobile phones have like limited space. So all the animation that can show you where data is coming from and going to are like super cool. But on the web, you have a big monitor, just slap everything there, let the user like drag the mouse to where he needs. Yeah. That's great insight.
Cool. Well, Mike, this has been a lot of fun. Are there any topics that we've missed? Anything you want to dive into more details on, or anything we haven't touched on?
Well, just to complete what our talk about Framer Motion.
Yeah.
You can do many, many, many other things with motion that the ones that we've discussed here. You can have something that's called variants, which allow you to animate whole trees of React elements. Like the animation where let's go back to the list where you need to list a list of items. Like you can stagger the children of the list a little bit, like delay them by 1 second each so they show up in a ladder way. That's also super easy to do. You can also like allow elements to be draggable. You can use scroll position animations, like the TechCrunch thing that shows you when you finish reading the article. You can do that. So there are many things that you can do with the motion library.
Yeah, and I'd encourage people too, because I've been just sort of toying with their homepage. They have some really cool ways of showing them too. So it's just, you'll find the link to Framer Motion in the show notes. And it's just kind of a fun webpage to look around on and just see what it makes possible. Maybe it'll inspire you to put some of these things in your own app.
When it comes to animation libraries, that really is something, a book you want to judge by its cover, right?
If they're exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's going to be a good library.
It's only a cover, actually. There's no book.
If their own website isn't good, though, that's an indication.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly.
Hey, folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
Well, why don't we transition here into picks? And Paige, do you want to kick us off today?
Sure. I will kick us off with a book that I've actually been reading. And this was one that was sent to me by one of our leadership team at work. And I really hope that it gets sent to everybody at work, because it's, so far, it's been really good. It's called Leadership and Self-Deception, Getting Out of the Box. And it's been in print for probably 20 years or so, but it's a really unique, it's told from a very unique perspective where the characters in the book are fictional, but the situations that they're describing and how to be a better teammate, a better partner to your spouse or to your kids, it really is easy to apply to kind of seeing yourself in these situations. So I would definitely say that it, you know, it's $10 on Amazon US, so it's not a big book. It's a couple hundred pages probably. And I've been reading it for the last couple weeks for 10 or 15 minutes every day. The chapters are very short, but it's really a good reminder and a good way to start seeing how you can be a better leader, both within the company or just a better person in general to people, the people around you, and helping, you know, succeed and be better as a company or better as a group. So I would definitely say that it's worth the investment. I've really, really enjoyed it a lot more than some of the self-help books that I've read in the past.
Jack, what picks do you have?
So I'm going to go with one. I don't know. Maybe you've done it before, but when you go through the long, dark nights of Portland and Oregon, and it's just so dark, and you're like, oh, I just want something uplifting. I Encanto, this Disney film that is just so bright and so beautiful and so fun and has such a great story to it. It just kind of lifts up your whole day. And it's kind of a cool contrast. I've seen lately that TV shows are so dark, and they're not just dark content, just actually physically dark. Like, I can't actually see anything going on the screen. Or it's all
like Matrix style. Yeah.
Right. I mean, well, actually, the Matrix, the newer one, was brighter than the older ones, which are all this like pasty olive green drab awfulness. But Encanto is just, it is an explosion of color on your TV. Right. And it is just like, wow, that is awesome. And it's just so much fun to see. And the kind of, and as I say, like the story is just so great and it's just so uplifting. So if you're kind of like, oh, this, you know, and the whole like, you know, pandemic, then the sentence didn't never end, and you just want something fun in your life, just, you know, watch Encanto. It's great. It's great for kids, great for adults, great for the whole family. Just watch it.
I'm going to have to do it. We haven't checked it out yet. I think it's probably on Disney Plus at this point. Okay. Yeah. We're usually several months behind the times here. So it's coming into our cycle about now.
Get the tissue up. Yeah. Because you're going to cry. Of course you're going to cry. You know you're going
to Pixar
cry.
Movies always.
Oh, every time. Every time.
Cool. My pick this week is Wordle, which is
sweeping
very
the world.
Hipster, very trendy, but very it's actually... Trendy. It's kind of fun. If you've been living under a rock and have somehow not heard of this, it's a game. It's a simple game where you just try to guess a five-letter word and you get six tries to do it. But it's just really well executed. It's a web app, and which is also kind of fun. It's a really simple web app. Like they did a really good job on the UX, and it's a once a day thing. I think that's kind of its main gimmick. There's a word that everybody does every day. So it can be kind of a fun just household challenge or just challenge amongst friends and stuff. And I've enjoyed playing it in the morning. I'm not very good at it. My wife beats me every day, but I get to gloat over her the like usually once a week I beat her and I can hold it over her. So that gives me great joy. So that is my pick. Mike, what picks do you have for us?
Yeah, I will pick a movie like Jack did. Lately, I watched a movie called The Hand of God, which has, I know that I'm Argentinian, it has very little to do with Maradona, very little. It's the story of Paolo Sorrentino, which is the actual director of the movie. He is telling his own story. Paolo Sorrentino won an Oscar for his previous movie called The Great Beauty, which I encourage you to watch it. It's even better than The Hand of God. I'm picking The Hand of God because I assume that you've maybe watched The Great Beauty. The Great Beauty is an incredible movie. Like, go watch it right now. But if you want something more trendy and you want to be able to talk to your peers about something trendy, you can watch The Hand of God. I believe it's Netflix, and it's really nice movie. It's about cinema. It's about childhood. It's about the story of a cinema director. So super interesting.
That nice. Sounds awesome.
Awesome. Well, Mike, this has been a lot of fun. My last question for you is, if people want to reach out, if they want to follow you, what's the best place to do so?
Yeah, so you can read my blog at michaelche.com. That's MIKEALCHE. I hope I spelled that correctly. and you can follow me on Twitter on Mike Lodash Alche, which is the same, but with a low dash in the middle between Mike and Alche.
Awesome. Cool stuff. And we'll make sure to get those in the show notes if people want just easy to click on links as well.
Yeah, thanks. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And until next week, everybody.
Yeah, until next week. Good seeing
you. Bye.
Yeah.
See you.
Bye.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
I know. You've always been looking for a way to support the React Roundup podcast. Well, you're in luck. We just set it up. It's reactroundup.com/premium. And all you have to do is go over there. You pay us $9 a month. And you'll get access to a couple of things. The first thing is you will get episodes with no ads. Won't that be nice? You will also get access to a monthly call where we sit down and we plan out what we want to talk about for the next several months. And you can give us ideas for questions and other things that we can ask our guests that are coming up. So you'll know what episodes are coming up and what we're going to be talking about and have some feedback there, which is awesome. And finally, it's a terrific way to support the show. So if you want to support us in putting out React Roundup every month, go to reactroundup.com/premium and sign up.